Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Okay.
Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change, we still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans, are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode, storyline by storyline, character by character, as we break down the making of your favorite zip code with your host, Charles
Rosen. Did I say
that? Yeah. Mary
Mullen. This thing about the real person, and we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks crush, TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests and all your questions. Live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh, yeah.
Well, here we are on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. It's me and one of the other survivors of the last couple of years, Larry Mullen. Chuck and I were last week when we were joking about, we're still here, we're still doing it, we're still sharing these awesome stories. You were on the East Coast, though, wow.
Yes, I am on the East Coast.
How was your trip? We always love hearing about your trip to the East.
Oh, well, the trip is, you know, it's arduous. It's a red-eye flight to Boston from L.A. And then we did have a car pick us up and take us to Portsmouth, Rhode Island, on the island of Aquidneck, where I had shipped a car for the summer. And a friend of mine has a farm there, so I picked that up. And then the next day, we kind of we know we're going to be going to a ferry, and you never want to have an empty car going across on a ferry because it's so expensive. So we loaded up with, you know, like 15 like Bounty towels and toilet paper and everything on this island that we live on, Martha's Vineyard, is so expensive. And then we finally got over. So, you know, it took about 28 hours to get here. But it's always good. It's always adventurous.
And I do know that one thing people really like to hear about is you starting your car. And
well, yeah, you know, I have to say, you know, I have a car here. I leave it in August and I come back in late April. And in between, I take off the negative cable of the battery. Just take it off. I just unscrew it, put it aside. I come back 6 months later. I put the negative cable back. I turn the key. It starts right up.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's amazing. It's a miracle.
So all is good. Now we're looking at the episode Fortunate Son today.
Yes.
And it's interesting because there's so many different things happening. We have Brandon returning to gambling. We have this woman who, and once we get our buddy Sherry Weiss on, she'll say exactly the woman's name. But we have this woman who Steve is working for. And you said this scenario happened to you. Well, so I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing we should just set up. This was an episode that aired December 13th. So it was after Sweeps episodes. So we've already had, and also after the departure of Dylan McKay. Also, this is post. So, and this is an episode almost like where there's a lot of standalone elements in this episode because we really weren't gearing up the next big thing, which is going to be Kelly's cocaine addiction for another episode or two to the Christmas show, I think. But the other thing is, this is an episode directed, I want to give the credits here, James Fargo. And if you look at the writer credits on it, it's massive. We never have credits like this, but it's like
Larry, everybody that was with the staff has got a writing credit.
It's like Lana Freeman, Freestead Melman, Welpley, Eisendraft, and you know, and then Jessica Steve and I's story. So yeah, so this was an episode.
What happened? We're not used to seeing this.
Jessica, Steve, and I had the story, had a story, and then we farmed it out to one of our freelancers, Lana Melman, who had done great work for us and probably did good work in us, but the stories were changing so quickly. By the time she handed the script in, it didn't apply anymore. Parts of the ones did, but we had to adjust because we knew we had changed. You know, it's a fluid thing. That's what was so difficult about telling 32 hours a season was – you had to keep the circle small so everyone knew what was going on. Information was really key. And so we always had small staffs. And so that information obviously didn't get out to Lana. And now we've got pre-production starting, and we're probably in double-ups, maybe the last double-ups before Christmas. So it's really imperative that we get pages in. And I think we just put everyone in. We locked the door, and we wrote the script and handed it in. And I never wanted to see it again, frankly, until 23 years later. I saw it this week, and it was terrific. I had no idea, because I just remember how painful it was and how ornery everyone was and cranky. And I just, you know, you got to keep going. You got to finish these things, and you got to deliver pages so people can board the stuff and do what has to be done in the double up situation. And it was a real pleasure to watch it.
Let me bring in our buddy Sherry Weiss here. Okay, she has been a minute since she's been with us.
Professor Sherry Weiss.
That's right.
Thank you.
She's very esteemed, probably the most knowledgeable person in the field, arguably.
Very kind of you to say.
It's true. It's easy.
It's been a minute.
We're seeing your shining face. You look great. You're still in Wilmington?
Thank you. Yes, I am. Yeah.
Good. Well, I hope you run into my friend Sydney Penny.
One of these days.
Go to Java's Jester's Job,
Jester's Cafe.
Yeah, Jester's Cafe.
Yeah. Now you just revealed all that, so now anyone who wants to meet Sydney Penny will know where to go.
Exactly. Sydney, her and her husband Rob, they run that cafe, and I love that cafe.
Oh, amazing.
Need to come down and visit us.
We love doing our road trips. It's just a question of having the time, but maybe, you know, can't count it out. We haven't made plans yet to go back.
I will be in New York next week. I want to try to get up to see. Yeah. I do want to try to make that happen. So, hey Sherry, it's good to see you. It's been a minute since you've last been here. How is everything with you? Are you all good in the world of the teen drama horror stuff?
Yes, teen drama horror is going strong for well over 10 years now. My newsletter has a Tuesday edition where I'm rounding up the news and the links of everything that's happened related to the teen dramas over the last week. And so I cover Beverly Hills 90210, Dawson's Creek, The OC, One Tree Hill, the original Gossip Girl, the Gossip Girl spinoff, as well as the 90210 spinoff referring to the CW version. So if you're interested in any of those shows,
I know you're a big fan of that version.
And like I said, she is the professor, because you're talking about detailed analysis.
Yeah. Yes.
There could be analytics in the teen drama world. She's got the analytics on this.
It's serious shit.
I would definitely recommend that
Thank
if you really
you.
Want to dive deep into that world. Sherry, did you see this episode, Fortunate Son? Have you seen this episode?
Is that a rhetorical question? Yes, obviously I've seen it many times, but I did just rewatch it last night.
Good. Sherry, I mean, Larry just went through this process of all the writers that were in this. This was a lot of writers that were working on this. Other places may have just said Darren Star. So it just
That is true. And I can tell you the reason that happens. If you go on to IMDb's main page for a given episode, it says writers Darren Star, and it might say another name after that. If you click into the full cast and crew, writers section, it shows Darren Star, creator in parentheses,
right,
and then the writers of the episode.
Yeah.
But people who don't do their homework giving the wrong attribution.
I love that.
But, you know, I did notice, as you guys said, how many names were on this episode, both as the teleplay credit and as the writing credit. And then I was even more surprised to see that Lana didn't work on any other series. This was her only show she ever did in her career.
No. On the Beverly Hills 90210.
Yes.
Well, you know, again, she was a FOC.
Friend of Chuck.
Yes. Jeff Melvin, her husband, is a very esteemed director in Hollywood. He directed some episodes of us. He's also a fine polo player. But, you know, like I said, I say no more. She was FOC, and so she did write on episodes. But, yes.
We got to get Jeff. Jeff Melman directed some really incredible 90210 episodes. So, Jeff, listening to this, come to the dark side. People have to come to the dark side, which is the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
It's Colin. The dark side.
Oh,
this is
by
so
the way,
light
yes, we do
joyful.
Have news. It isn't dark. It's the light side. But we actually have communicated with Jason Wiles, and he's promised us to come on.
So it's
very
coming close.
The character of Colin Robbins, who's in this episode, which we'll discuss when we get to it. But anyway,
there's something in the air, Larry, because even someone from season 8 just recently said to me, "I'm so sorry. I would love to come on and do this podcast." So it's something is changing in the air where they're just going to start. Now, Dina Meyer will just show up out of the blue.
It's archival.
Let's not get carried away, Pete.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. There's a bunch of haters still. I won't name them
yet. Well, but let's go back to this thing about all these writers, Larry. I have to ask you, this is not typical though of a situation in the writer's room where there's so many people writing and it's a late night writing session and all of this stuff. What's going on? I mean, what was the main story that was creating so much trouble in the ones that we saw in this episode?
It wasn't the main story. It wasn't the story. We're going to see Drancy in a second, who plays Isaiah. That story was a standalone. It was the other ones which had to be adapted because we had changed different things. And I think, I literally don't think we even had the Brandon story at that point, the Brandon Natch story. I think we had just, you know, we had just taken our eye off the ball maybe. And so there were some other things that just had to be done. I don't think there's another 9021 episode that has this kind of a conglomeration of writing credits. But I mean, sometimes it happens in comedies all the time because it's more of a table writing situation.
Sure.
For drama, it's very rare. And also rare for the Writers Guild of America West to grant us permission to do that. Because sometimes they'll just say, no, that's too many writers, you can't have it. But in this circumstance, we must have asked for it and we won the appeal or whatever. So everyone kind of got covered for their hard work. And we needed everybody.
Clearly, yes. I mean, one of the things that you guys do in this is, we're just talking about the Brandon thing. You throw back to Brandon's gambling stuff. But this is great the way this is done because he's, you know, you change the Peach Pit After Dark into this casino for charity. It's a charitable.
We have one event which then all the other stories come off of. It's in a way, even though it was created such a hodgepodge, it actually shows the goodness of what we could do. You take one event and have all the stories come off it. So we had, you know, the sororities doing a charity. And so everyone's showing up there. So now there's going to be casino night. So then at least the Brandon's gambling addiction and, you know, Donna's going to be late, you know, and then you have the bidding for the sitting for a portrait of Colin Robbins, he's going to paint your portrait between Valerie and Kelly Taylor is a wonderful bit there. And we play that through, I think. So it becomes a major story point for us. Again, we laid some seeds there, which are going to be helpful later when you're really trying to find story for you when you're doing 32 hours a year.
When you're doing the Brandon stuff, there comes the conversation, I'm sure, of, well, we have to show Duke. We need people to know what we're even talking about. So now we have to go back to
Duke's bad boy.
And we have to get clearance from Duke that this is okay, right? Isn't that how that works?
He just gets paid. He doesn't get
there's a credit for him in the opening credit.
Maybe they did have to ask and he said we wanted a credit, so there's a credit up front for him for Billy Vera. Mm-hmm. and he gets a clip, what we call a clip fee, which we all love.
Well, I'm sure he loved it because out of something he did all these years ago, he's just coming back.
It's always a gift. The scholarship.
But it's great stuff, and we get to see Nat in this familiar, you know, this fatherly sort of role because we don't have parents on the show anymore at this point, right?
No, in fact, we keep them alive here by saying they're not coming back from Christmas, and then the unreliable narrators that we are, we bring Sydney back. This season, does she come back?
The very next episode, Angels Leave Her Come High.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we would always do. It's, you know, we love the unreliable narrator.
Sherry, what do you think of going back to Brandon's gambling addiction? I think Jason's really even almost better at being addicted to gambling in this episode than he is in the one from season 3. What do you think of it?
Well, of course, you know, he's had several more years of acting experience. He's started directing by this point, so he's just in a different place in his career. I love storylines that call back to years prior. I thought it was a great use of a flashback. My gripe would be that there's a continuity error. In the episode, it said more than once that he was betting on football when the actual season 3 storyline was revolved around betting on basketball. But
all these writers in the room.
I relied on Steve and Jessica for that knowledge, and they did not deliver.
Seven writers get credited on this.
Only you were able to Google back in 1995.
You all missed it.
Arduous process to research in those days.
I know.
You all missed it.
We should have had some lowly intern rewatch the episode for you. But no, so there's that. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, that makes me even clearer that it was a late pick for that episode.
Yeah, and it's a bottle story. Realized
we could have Nat and stuff. So I don't think
it's rare that we see Brandon being an asshole, and Jason does it really well. It's rare that we see Brandon and Nat having an adversarial relationship or moments. I think you could have revisited it if you wanted to, because in that final scene between Susan and Brandon, and I have to say, I love Susan's dorm room. I wish mine was that big. But, you know, it's, they say, you know, she's going to help him through this with his addiction, and then it doesn't come back. Ironically, the addiction we end up seeing explored during the season is Kelly's
addiction.
Yeah, coming right up. Yeah. That's interesting. God, we should have had you on staff, I think, just to help.
Her and Darren Martin, just at least to remember. But in season three, it was actually basketball, right?
You know, we worried about
this. Things, is bothering
I'm
you?
I'm pretty Larry. Certain that somehow that whole Brandon storyline came late. It was like, oh my god, we could do this thing because we needed pages. We were short. I think we must have had to cut something right away. There was another storyline there we cut.
That's. I wonder what that would be. Yeah. Well, I mean, but he's great at this, and he gets into it with Nat, and I love seeing him. I love seeing Brandon have a problem. You know what I mean? Like, I love to see it being his own problem. And we just were watching it. He was snippy with Susan Keats.
It's really under his skin. And it's how it really is sometimes when you have a compulsion like that. And then the director, James Fargo, did a really good job. You know,
you said you knew James Fargo.
James, I know, because we both work with the same orangutans. He did Every Which Way But Loose.
What?
Yeah, you know, I had a career punching up an orangutan actor, Bobby Barasini's orangutans, which were Vegas headliners. I would go a couple of times a year and punch up their act. But they also starred in Every Which Way But Loose and Any Which Way You Can. That was Poppy, one of my stars that I would write for. Each monkey had a different bit. Okay, some would go like this, some could goose you. Some there were, you know, it was interesting. They were lifelong friends.
All right, I'm gonna hit a
check
real
out Monkey Mansion. Check out Monkey Mansion on YouTube.
Okay, Monkey Mansion on YouTube. Yeah. I'm gonna
Vegas show at the Stardust, and then
I'm gonna hit an old ad here. When we come back, we're gonna bring a guest on, and we're gonna dive into the main story here, which is of this episode, which is Donna and Joe. Going well, we'll talk. You know? Yes, exactly.
Well, well, well. When was the last time you checked out the Beverly Hills 90210 Show shop? Because now it's loaded with so much more stuff. Did you ever want to join the gang at CU? Because now you can wear your official CU t-shirt. Or want to get into the fun with America's zip code? Represent with this cool swag. Or maybe you have an invite to the Peach Pit After Dark and need the coolest shirt ever. We have loaded the store with so much more. So don't be a squeeze. Head over to Beverly Hills 90210showshop.com for all the latest goods.
It is definitely time for some new merch in there. I'm wearing today. Hey, Drancy, I'm wearing today this old CU shirt. I don't know.
I've got the high school version.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I've got my Roy Randolph Royal School of Acting.
I've got the Top Ramen shirt on. Everybody loves Ramen. Right?
Well, I do love Ramen very much.
What are you guys doing? Good man. Joining us here is Isaiah from the episode Drancy Jackson. How are you, man? It's good to see you. How has it been?
I'm fine, man. I'm fine. Thanks for having me on the show. First off, I really appreciate it. It's been over 23 years, so it's been a long time. Yeah. But it's been amazing. You know, I kind of remember it like it was yesterday. The experience was amazing. You know, everything the love I felt from everybody on the cast and on the set was amazing. You know, I have a couple of stories that happened. Aaron Spelling was amazing. The whole the whole experience of being on Beverly Hills 90210 was amazing.
Did you have to go through a audition process? What was that like for you? How old were you at the time?
I was 16 or 17.
Okay.
You were playing younger.
Playing 11
I was
years
playing old. Really, really young.
Yeah.
Yeah. As an actor, I did that too, so I totally appreciate that.
Well, look at Andrea Zuckerman. She was playing younger.
That's pretty good, though. She was 17 and playing 11. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, I mean, I'm 40. So, yeah, so when I auditioned for it, we went to Aaron Spelling's office, and you know what stood out to me? I don't know if you remember, but you have to remember I think it was a 24 karat pinball machine. Do you remember that pinball machine?
With all his hits on it. Yeah. I'm sure I was in the room when you read. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That stood out, the carpet. But yeah, I auditioned in front of Aaron Spelling, got the role. Like I said, everybody was great, man. Tori was great. Everybody at work was great. Brian Austin Green was great. I remember playing with him. We were playing a drifter game because all the power on the side of our dress rooms were out. So Luke Perry's power was out. I think Tiff Amber Thiessen's power was out. Mine, and I remember my grandmother at the time, rest in peace, her and Tori loved Days of Our Lives. So she let my grandmother watch Days of Our Lives in her dressing room. So it was a great experience. I love it. Yes.
Oh, so your grandmother was the one who took you down there. She was.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's I still was a minor. Yeah.
So you're doing this show. You're showing up to 90210. I mean, were you aware of it? Like, were you aware of what 90210 was? Like that?
I wasn't. I didn't watch it all the time, but yeah, of course I was aware of it. It was a pretty popular TV series. But yes, I was pretty aware of it. And when I got the part, and I was actually given the opportunity to be on the show, mix that around. When I was given the opportunity to be on the show, and I got the part, you know, I was amazed. I was amazing because I actually am familiar with the show.
You knew who everybody was, and where was, and you said everybody was pretty welcoming right from the start.
From the start, we had no issues. I was the only kid on the set that day, I think. And
what was the first scene you did? What was the first scene you shot there? Do you remember? Was it the store?
I think it was the liquor store. I think the first thing we did, we filmed on location, and yeah. I think we were in the liquor store. Yeah.
Your real life age is really interesting because if you were 16, 17 when you appeared, that's the same age that Tori and Brian were when the show started.
Theoretically,
so
yeah.
You were just right after them, and they were just seeing the young actor that they once were a few years earlier.
Exactly. And I knew the show was extremely popular, but you know, even to this day, you know, not a lot, but you know, not a lot now, but people are like, "Hey, you look familiar. Were you on 90210?" And I'm like, yes, I was. Yes, I was. So you know, it's been amazing. I still get residual checks, so hey, I can't complain.
I know, it's a wonderful thing. Ian Ziering says it's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, yes.
Larry, what about putting this particular story together? Why don't you talk to us a little bit about it?
You know, it was coming out of the Donna Martin's relationship with the other woman on the court, and there was one of the character name, the actress name of Tembi Locke was a wonderful
character. Is Lisa.
She played Lisa, yeah. And we knew she was really talented when we cast her, and she's had a really big, long career, which I'm not surprised at all. And, you know, we have a relationship, so we knew, you know, again, we're always looking for where we can find story. And we thought we really had to, you know, and again, it's the show is Beverly Hills. I mean, everything we do is Beverly Hills, and so you want to challenge that sometimes. And one way is, you know, dealing with L.A. stories. And L.A. stories, and this is coming off of a lot of movies that, you know, that were popular, Boys in the Hood and some of the other ones. And just, you know, we felt we had to be honest and tell stories. Like, what would it be like if Donna was down there? Could she handle it? And could we bring some positive message? And that's what I, in seeing how it played out. So I think, and also this follows the tradition, which Chuck Rosen, probably never seen the episode, always set up. He always had a mix of social stories, you know, social issue stories. And that's what set the series apart. It wasn't just kissing, though we depended on kissing. And there was kissing in this episode, I'm sure. But we wanted to be able to tell honest stories. We wanted to be authentic about Los Angeles. And it is. I mean, and I think, you know, looking at it today, 23 years later, like I said, I hadn't seen this thing. I felt it kind of rang true, and I really was happy the way it ended, the way we resolved it, because I did not remember at all. But I just thought it was kind of good. It was before people talked about Pay It Forward, but there it was. There was Pay It Forward.
Yeah, and I actually agree. Like I said, I really appreciate being in that episode also, because it is a real-life issue, and it is facts, and things like that do go on, not only, you know, in our community, but in everybody's community. So yeah. It brought light, like you said, 23 years ago to something that, you know, is still going on today. So it had a significant meaning, you know, being a part of that, because that's real and that's what happens. And, you know, that was just something that was addressed that people can relate to.
Can I play devil's advocate for a second?
Oh, yes, I'm sure you will.
Larry, what would you say if someone said this storyline was just, you know, enhancing the white savior trope? Here comes.
Well, but these are our lead characters, I would say. But I thought it was interesting, especially there was a scene that was in the parking lot of the Peach Pit, where they're coming back after the experience with Isaiah and his family, and they're going, "Oh, look, BMW, yes. BMW," and you know, just realize we haven't really. You just, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't. I don't know. I just thought that was honest of it, and I thought all we can hope is for kindness from people. and people to understand people and walk a second in their shoes. And I kind of thought we did that. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's the white savior, that thing. But anything can be criticized. But we try. You know, again, we put ourselves out there. And I think that the heart's in the right place in this story. And I basically, because I think Drancy did a wonderful job, as I say, playing this kid who's basically an 11-year-old kid who's father to these kids. And he was so mature and so impressive that anyone in that situation would want to help him. But the original moment of it where he's shoplifting because he wants to have a birthday present for
his brother,
and he doesn't want to pay the $5. And Donna, you know, covers for him. That's a cool moment. And then Donna walking through the neighborhood and the local gangsters giving them some grief there and him bailing her out. I just thought, I don't know. I was very happy with the way it went. And life should be like that, that we can build bonds that way through helping each other.
Exactly.
So, you know,
I remember that day too.
We had
the hood. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
hey, we guys, had the local. Where you guys been at? And they were like, Yeah,
it was very sweet because you just jump right in the moment, and I was proud of our show for it because look, we could not deny it. I mean, if anything, we were a white show. You know, we had no white diverse character in the main cast other than until Jesse came in for 1 year. You know, but at the same time, you know, we always had rich, you know, guest stars. We certainly had Chris Williams. You know,
sure.
We love Chris and all the other, you know, other folks who really, you know,
added. See, that's why I want to say that, you know, because, you know, Beverly Hills 90210, I was treated with the utmost respect. I didn't even see 90210. I just seen, you know, my fellow actors and actresses, and it was all love, you know, and that's how I felt. And it's been like that. And I've said that before in certain Instagram posts. People are like, well, how was it working on Beverly Hills 90210? I'm like, it was excellent. It was great. You know, it was working. And Tori was super cool. So
yeah, I want to hear about the Tori thing because you have some really good scenes with her.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about doing scenes with Tori and doing some of that stuff with her and Cameron Bancroft, who was Joe Bradley in this episode. Yeah.
Yeah, they were actually, like I said, they were especially Tori. She was super cool. You know, we really had that chemistry on and off camera as far as acting wise. That's why I came off, you know, kind of really, really good on film, super down to earth. You know, when I say down to earth, like I can't really put, you know, any more emphasis on down to earth and super humble. And so it was really easy for me to, you know, act with her and communicate. And it was just easy to get through it because of the type of, you know, woman and type of actress and type of person she is. And like I said, everybody, not only Tori, but everybody was so welcoming. And we were in the hood too. And like I said, it was just, you couldn't even tell. Everything was good, and I would never ever forget that experience, ever.
Where was the locations for some of this? Do you know, Shari?
I don't know, but there was a lot of B-roll, you know, that was used to set the scene. And as they were driving Joe and Donna in the car, you have the vantage point of Donna looking out the car window and what she sees, and it's
going
to give you an impression of the neighborhood.
We tried to tell that story.
And the contrast with.
And I forgot where we filmed the last scene where I guess my mom, the woman who played my mom, we came and it was a big hug and it was a big, you know, thank you. I think, well, I'm not sure if it was at a daycare, but I forgot, but I remember that too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you would have had to go to school. You would be going to school a couple of hours.
Going to school,
day,
yeah.
Too. Yeah, yeah, because we had the on-set teacher.
Yeah, and I guess the whole gist of the episode was about, you know, single parent, single African-American mom, you know, leaving her, you know, her son at home watching the kids while she was working. Happens, you know, and like I said, it happened.
You were in school. Were you in school at the time of this episode airing? What were people? What were they saying to you after this episode of 90210 airs?
Well, I was super popular after that. Everybody was like, 90210 this. I was like, yeah, I was on 90210, and I wasn't just. It wasn't just one or two lines. You know, it was
no.
It was a lot.
So you were in the main storyline of 90210. Yeah.
So that was crazy. I soaked it up like a sponge. So you know, I loved it. I loved it, and I was super popular. And then after that, that paved the way, you know, for me to go and do other things. You know, until life happened, and you know, beautiful kids and everything. So, you know, but it was awesome.
Yeah, because did you have many credits before that? Before 90210, I should have checked.
I had a couple of credits. I did a show called Mrs. Piggle Wiggle. I did a remake of a movie called Piranha. I think a Tiger Woods story. I played the title. That was either before or after, but I had a couple of credits. I was still about 3-4 years into acting, but I started off running. You know, thank God. So. I had a couple of things before then.
No, that's good.
And after, so.
And so, what's going on with you today, man? What are you doing today?
Absolutely nothing as far as the acting, and I would, right. I would love to get back into it. I'm just, I have two kids, you know, I got a girlfriend, I got a household, but I think it's time. I think it's time. I think I feel as though I still have it. You know, I don't look 40. You know, I feel as though I still have it. So
I think you could play 25. I think.
Yeah. I agree. You have a baby face.
You know, you got that gift. You know.
You know, I'm still Screen Actors Guild, so I'm just I'm open for anything. If you guys have any ideas, if you guys want to get back together, I'm open for it. Let me know. You know, I'll let you know my work schedule and we can work around it. So,
Larry, just write him a script.
There you go.
You know, I've been out of the business since 2007. You know that. But
you never know, man. This could lead to something really
good. My health is good. Yeah. At least my stress level is very good.
All right, we're going to say goodbye to Drancy, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of this other stuff that's going on in this episode. Thanks for being here, man. It was good to see you, bud.
Thanks for this.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
And also, again, you did such a fabulous job in that show. It's such a revelation seeing it. And just seeing Donna Martin in this tough storyline, which I thought, you know, Tori really acted beautifully, I thought. You know, and again, really satisfying at the end.
Much gratitude to you, Drancy, for coming on here and telling us. And as Larry said, I mean, the work is phenomenal. Your acting work was incredible at that age, and I would love to see you in some more stuff. So get back out there, man.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, good seeing you, man.
Bye.
All right, let's move on to talking about other things that are happening in this thing. The other thing that's going on is Steve. I mean, Larry, and I want to ask you this. Is this kind of where you thought Steve – if you were to put him in a career post college, are you trying to lay this ground? Like he's working in a Hollywood office for this woman. Is that? Do you think that's where Steve, instead of running a newspaper,
seemed like a natural progression for Steve? You know, it's a bullshit job. You basically earn you earn 10% of other people, basically. You know, you do nothing yourself, but you get 10% of a lot of people. Right. Yeah, no, it seemed really real. There's something funny. I'm watching it. Probably, I don't know if Professor Weiss noticed it, but there's at one point there's a phone call, and when we first see Steve at the office at IETM,
yes,
there's a phone call from Erwick.
Yes,
Jonathan. Of course,
Erwick was our executive at Fox at the time, so that's kind of a little throw out to him. You know,
I was going to ask you about that.
He's ahead of Hulu now, I think.
What I liked about you know the storyline was that it peeked behind the showbiz curtain of what, you know, we as everyday people normally don't get to see. Now, you know, Steve picked up that copy of Variety, which is another meta moment, because if there was news about Beverly Hills 90210, you're going to read it in Variety, and here we are.
Exactly. Daily Variety was so important to us.
Yeah.
This is before the internet.
In a show where the stories had so many writers, how does this one come to the table? Do you have any thought on that?
Neither one of us just wrote it himself. I might have just written the thing. You know, again, this is like four-beat story. It's a four-beat story. Again, we need this Steve story. It's a four-beat story. He's got to get a job, you know. And again, it does give a peek behind the curtain a little bit, because there's a meanness to the business, and there's an honesty to it, too. I mean, I actually quite like this story in a way, you know. It's set up well. Hey, read all my mail. Steve reads the mail. The girl's getting fired. He knows she's getting fired, and she's devastated. And she does what people do, you know, when they're fired, you just try to find someone to help you find a way back in. Mm-hmm. And Steve tries, and you know, and basically the guy says to the girl, "Great, though." And we have a little hashtag Me Too moment where, you know, the guy says, you sleeping with the girl, Steve? Like, he can't understand why Steve, the top agent,
he's going to bat for her. Yeah.
He's helping her. She wants to know if Steve's sleeping with her. And Steve goes, no. He said, well, me neither. Maybe that would have helped, which is pretty pretty rough. But
then in the next episode, we find out that he does have a mistress.
Oh, the guy? The
story. Yeah, in the next
episode. Oh, you're
episode,
right. He gives the wrong Christmas
Steve
present.
That's right. He does.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Right. Yeah, he's a kind of a, you know, this is what happened. This is a reflection of the business at the time.
Larry, but anyway, it's interesting.
Has to find a way to fire the girl. He has to find the right words, which I think is great.
I want to ask you, though, before we came on, you told me that this happened to you, and I know some of us love our wrestling when we get into a wrestling talk, but this happened to you. The very storyline happened to you almost.
The firing thing is, you know, we've all been fired. It's a terrible feeling. But also, when people... You know, okay, so my wrestling story was I got recruited out of Hollywood to go to work for the WWE, right, for them. It's a big jump for me. All of a sudden, I'm going to leave television and join the circus, basically. But I'm from theater, so I thought, this is going to be great. And the guy who hired me, I really like. He's another Hollywood guy. So we've all set the thing up. And so I arrive in Stanford, and I set my pencils up and get ready with all my stuff in my office, share my office with Brian Gerwitz and Lagan and all the, you know, Michael Hayes, all the heavyweights. And I get called upstairs to the guy who hired me. He calls me and says, close the door. He says, I said, what's going on? He says, I was just fired. Wow. I went, oh, God, this is not going to work out.
This is terrible.
This is the bad sign from the beginning. Yeah. But anyway, so this gal gets fired.
Did you live in Stanford when that happened? Were you living in
housing? Because, yeah, we would. Don't forget, the schedule was we'd write from like Wednesday to Saturday. And then Sunday we'd fly out because Monday and Tuesday we have live shows. And then we'd fly back, hopefully Tuesday night. But sometimes the fly home would be Wednesday. There'd be no day off, which I went, what? Wow. No turnaround? But yeah, they don't do that now.
No, but and Claire gets involved only through this storyline. She has a very minimal thing that's happening.
Yeah, the Claire thing is not great, but you know, she has a little bit of jealousy. It doesn't show her off very well in this episode. But Steve really does. I really like what Ian did with this stuff because it's difficult to fire people and make them and not be a shithead about it. And he kind of colors it really well. Like he does, the guy challenges him, it's up to you. If you want to survive in this business, you better learn how to fire people. And Steve does a good job with it. And Steve would have been a good agent. There's no doubt in my mind.
We've talked, I asked this, but we've talked about this before of like where you saw the characters going. To that point, do you think this is where you would have, if you had stayed in season 8 after graduation, is this kind of what you would have had Steve doing, do you think?
Well, would have tried, certainly. You know, it was something. Like it would be something showbiz related with all his connections, his mother and his father. I mean, this is what we do in Hollywood, you know, nepotism.
And we see him explore this agency life later on when he becomes the agent to the CU basketball player.
So that was where you guys wanted to go.
You know, again, we weren't thinking about it too much because there was just too much to think about on the plate. I never think too that far ahead, but other than to the next sweeps round.
Sherry, when you think about and then you've talked to Larry a lot for a long time, and Chuck, mm-hmm. when you think about what, because you have obviously watched the seasons all the way through. In retrospect, I mean, in the time, I have no problem with the beat. I think the beat makes a lot of sense, mm-hmm. you know. But in retrospect, does that make sense to you that maybe Steve should have been more of an agent?
Yeah, I can see that. I understand, you know, Larry's vision that these were extraordinary people and they should have had extraordinary careers and they went on to have rather ordinary careers.
Yeah, that's always bothersome to me.
I don't know that it bothers me in the same way. I don't think it's necessarily unrealistic for people to have a privileged upbringing. And then when they're, you know, wet loose, they're in for a rude awakening and find out, you know, the real world is a lot much harder to get by when mommy and daddy are no longer supporting you and things like that. But I can certainly see, you know, maybe today Steve is, you know, an agent somewhere.
And I think Brandon could definitely be a reporter. That's totally. Oh, no, he could have the paper for sure. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But,
and and when we left him, he was going on to the Washington Chronicle or the Washington Bureau of the New York Chronicle. So it was meant to be.
Oh, so he was going to run into Susan Keats there, probably.
Probably. Yeah. An esteemed career. He just started it with, you know, this startup paper.
Okay, we got to talk about
the
other thing.
When you're a drier fellow, you don't start a local newspaper. You don't start the Penny Saver.
Well, you know,
it was the Penny Saver. It was the Penny Saver.
You go to Oxford, you go to some other graduate school of renown.
And also, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Larry, because the dryer thing ends up being unfulfilled. Brandon wins the dryer, and we don't see anything ever happen to that. So had you been there for season 8... What would you have done to stay consistent with that storyline?
Well, to stay consistent, I would have had him in a very advanced college program as partly, and then he'd also have another job, like interning with a congressman or whatever, something like that.
I think we would have loved to have seen that, you know? Anyway, we can go into that forever. The other thing that's happening here, which we're going to launch into, is this thing with Colin. Colin is going to be... He's being auctioned because the other part of this is that they're using this. The Kelly is using this same night, this big fantasy night at the casino, and all of this for Kelly's thing. So now they have this big auction, and Valerie and Kelly get into a fight in the auction for Colin.
Well, who's got to paint their portrait?
Or whose portrait is he going to paint?
Yeah, he's exactly, which means I'll be sitting with him. Yeah, and it's kind of fun because we get to, anytime we can kind of poke those two together, it's kind of good. You know, it keeps it going. And again, it's a useful triangle.
It's a really awesome triangle. This was a very underrated episode. The stuff that's going on with Valerie, because you can't be upset that Valerie's bidding so high, right? There's the part of you that's got to be excited, like, oh my God, we're going to be making more money for the charity. But also, you're bidding for Colin. You know what I mean?
And then David and Valerie have just kind of started their relationship. That's correct, right?
Sure. Yeah, it's a few episodes prior.
Yeah, since a few episodes back. So that's the other thing with the risk for her. Then, you know, and David's, you know, he's kind of wondering what's going on, what she said with Colin. But that's good. I'm just trying to get the other things in this episode that I kind of stood out for.
Let's just stay here for a second because I had two notes. One, first of all, I love that you had the real life artist on.
Peter Tigler. Yeah, Peter Tigler.
I was hoping you would discuss this portrait, but you didn't. But I would have loved to know. You know, did he draw Tiffany from a picture, you know, that he replicated, or did she sit for him? I think that would have been really interesting. But so what Valerie eventually claims is that she wasn't bidding on the portrait to have alone time with Colin. It was really supposed to be David's Christmas gift and that she was doing it all for him. Are you buying that?
I don't buy that.
But I like the fact she has a backup plan.
She has an alibi, basically.
Yeah, she has. Yeah, I think that's good. Does she ever give it to David?
We see Colin create it.
I remember that.
And then he creates the mural, right?
No, this is not the mural. This is a portrait. Yeah.
He does do the mural at some point as well.
Oh, the mural. Yeah. That's later.
So the work leads to this picture leads to more work, right?
Right. We're going to hook him on cocaine pretty quickly now. You know, I noticed something else that this episode came 2 weeks after the one before, which didn't usually happen, but we actually skipped a week here. Right after Sweeps November, we don't ever have.
How did this episode do? Do we know what the rating of this episode was?
I would think that it would be just lower. You know, probably wouldn't have been. You know, the Fox guys couldn't promote someone dying or something else, and
it felt like a little bit of a filler episode between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yes,
Christmas was the very next week. Just one question I forgot to ask during the Brandon discussion. And maybe Pete will have insight on this from a production standpoint. All those shots of the dice throwing, how do you ensure the dice are going to land on the numbers you need?
It's a great question.
Well, how many times are you throwing that?
Well, I mean, you're not doing it with the main company, probably. You're probably doing that in a B-roll.
Because they're insets.
So they probably, it's an insert crew. You know, just probably having to go through it, you know, just having to get it right. Just like when people shoot, you know, when Chris Williams shoots baskets. And can't shoot.
Right, what you told us.
Continue to shoot till he hits one. Sorry, Chris. Come on the show, Chris.
How incredible Susan Keats looks in this episode. I know we talk about that every once in a while. She just is so stunning in this because she's wearing that dress and she's just like, she's in this casino and she tries to talk sense into Brandon, but he will just not listen.
Her hair back in those scenes, which she doesn't often do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Larry, do you have an opinion about
like Jason, you know, some of the stuff there where he really is like sweating, like, hey, you're sweating. It's hot in here. No, I mean, like, you really kind of play up that, you know, that addiction thing pretty well with him. I thought I was very, you know, he really committed himself to it and it's credit to the director for getting that out of him.
Yes. I was going to ask you about James Fargo and did he ever do any more 90210?
I think so.
He did one episode.
Larry, were you basically at this point getting ready for the next Christmas episode, which would have the,
like I said, this probably was the last double up of the season, I suspect, when we shot this. So we were already, we were probably already shooting this Christmas episode at the same time. And that one is which Angels We Have Heard on High.
I wrote that, or at least Phil and I wrote that, maybe somebody,
I think so. That was a pretty good one. Yeah, we bring Cindy home in that one, and Colin's hiding in the bathroom snorting coke. That's all beginning. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Anything else on your end, Sherry?
A couple things. Speaking of Duke, you know, we see him again in season 8, played by a different actor, drives me bonkers.
Yeah.
Fun fact, Tembi Locke, who plays Luke, you mentioned how she went on who plays Lisa, you mentioned how she went on to this career. She actually co-starred with Luke in the short-lived series Windfall.
Oh, that's right.
Which was that series too. Executive produced and created by Laurie McCarthy, who was a writer on our staff.
I didn't know that. I mean, I have to tell you, I thought that show was really, really well done. I loved that show. You know, did you watch that?
Sherry? I remember the promos, and I think the premise is really clever.
And Luke is so good in everything he does. So
everything. Yes. The episode I really want to see you guys do, and I think you've mentioned it in the past as a possibility for this season, is Speechless. The framework that, you know, the girls end up in this convent and they can't talk. So we're all hearing their inner dialogue, and all of that had to be recorded through ADR. And that's just so fascinating. And it's actually juicy. This is when we find out about Ray and Valerie sleeping together and Donna's reaction and everything. I really hope you dive into that.
Also, we should not forget that the other story, that the other main story, was Steve renting the Walsh house out for a porno.
Yes. And there's also a Dylan and Tony component as well.
Yes. Yeah.
We do have to cover this. I would love it to do it with Tori minimally. You know what I mean? And then
Kathleen would be good.
Tori and Kathleen would be great. Tori and Jenny would be great. You know what I mean?
I have to ask Professor Weiss, have you watched the Roku channel Swimming with Sharks series that Kathleen...
I haven't. I don't have Roku.
I highly recommend it. It is fantastic. I totally am impressed with what she did with this thing.
Well, I've been gathering a lot of articles. Of course,
she can't top it now. She has to create something alternate, but it's terrific. It really is. And the girl in it stars the girl from Mad Men, the young
She's
girl.
So great.
She's really good. And the cast is good. Donald Sutherland's in it.
Sutherland is so
good. Good job,
Kathleen. He's so good, Donald Sutherland, in this thing. Oh, you know what I mean? God, he's just so.
There are sex scenes in here that I have never imagined. and you know me. I mean, okay, so this is big praise. Okay.
No,
it's inspiration for the next book.
My book is out now. You actually can get it on Kindle. The new book on Kindle today. I think today.
And with that in mind, everything's right in it now, right? The words are correct.
Yes, I finally got the Amazon. Amazon doesn't have the heart. Doesn't have the paper book yet for the price that I want because they just have the secondary sellers. But the Kindle version is available for under $5. I would just grab it and read it. I just love this book, Road to Shambhala. It's on the final. It completes the Max Dean trilogy. Peter's never read one book, so it's
I'm excited to dive in. Larry, I do want to say you sent me a message to send to Kathleen about how much you loved it, and then she did say to me to tell you that she thought that you were one of the people that really got her and got the Claire vibe, and I thought that was a really nice, you know. Yeah, it was a really nice thing that you both had that little moment.
Yeah. I could do it directly, but I just kind of thought I'd let it go through you.
Yeah,
I didn't want to talk about it. Yeah, she does a great job. And she's in it, too. She's you know, quite good in it.
Oh, you mean in this Swimming with Sharks?
She's in Swimming with Sharks.
She is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's kind of a small part, but it runs through.
Oh, I think it's a critical part too. And but just that she has always told me that you were someone that was really always getting it.
I put the handcuffs on her.
and I thank you for that. So, yeah. Okay, this has been a great episode. I do want to cover Speechless. Sherry, anything else that you want to bring to the table here?
No, just thanks for having me back on. I really appreciate
great to
it.
Hear you.
No, it's great to
and
have
thanks
you.
Thanks for challenging the white savior stuff, which is, you know, we didn't even have that word then. But
And so it makes me curious, you know, what would you do differently today, if anything?
I don't know. I thought because it was even-handed, I thought, in a way. You know, they both saved each other. I thought
Lisa character represented that point of view. She pushed back on Donna and said, you know,
yeah,
we don't need Saint Donna, you know, exactly, coming into this family's life. So you did represent that viewpoint.
And it's amazing we had that oversight, that, you know, because it wasn't particularly enlightened time, particularly, mm-hmm. where it would have stood out, obviously. But no, I thought because everyone was helping everyone there in a way. And that was good stuff. But I thought also, you know, because we used the whole idea of the court a little bit too, you know, like people in the court, right, the princesses help each other. She's covering for Lisa at the store. And it just seemed very organic in a certain way. And and having Joe there and worrying about her. Oh, you know, I thought we got full marks on that from a show that, again, was so hodgepodge when we put it together. Literally, it was like a jigsaw puzzle. People just, you write a couple beats here. I'm going to meet back here in an hour. We got to just start putting it together and just run it through.
Well, to your credit, you wouldn't know that watching it. No, I know.
That's why I was amazed.
I was afraid
to watch it, frankly, Sherry. Because it just won the kind of, we felt got away. It just kind of fell between the two bigger, right after sweeps. There was a, and again, we, it probably, it was double us. We probably were concentrating on the other episode. Because James Fargo was not a go-to director for us.
He only did one other. So
yeah.
But what was the other episode?
I'll tell you in one second, but it was this season as well.
Oh, this season as well? Okay.
Yeah.
And I do know people love Larry when you
I think it was a snow one. Like it was like All This and Mary 2, maybe.
Yes, it was. Yes. That is it. Yeah.
Another forgettable episode. Sorry.
All right, this has been great, guys. We will be back next week. I don't know with what. I have no idea. I think we had something in mind, but I totally forgot what it was.
We have to get Jason, dear Jason Wiles, a date. We have to give him a couple of dates and let him pick one. But, yes, we really want him on. He says he's going to go on. We wish him the best. He's a good guy.
Yeah, we love Jason Wiles.
Not a hater. Not a hater.
He's not a hater, but he
should. but that's how we got him.
All right. So anyway, this was great. Good seeing you, Sherry. Thank you so much.
Well. Good seeing you, Sherry. Best to you.
Be back next week with Jester's. More Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye.